football on off the ball?
I think there is one pretty obvious candidate staring them in the face domestically, and that is Jens Bertel Askew, the Motherwell manager, who has performed wonders with this Motherwell team.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Hello to Paddy Andrews. Good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, man. It's great to be back. Yeah, it's been a while.
And also to Dara, who's, you know, I got the short straw of, well, we're going to cover some away games this year. Yeah, I'll do the one in London. I'll do the Twickenham game, he says, volunteering to take one for the team. Yeah.
It could have went horribly wrong as well. Like,
that it could have been.
Yeah. Yeah,
by the way, the great story.
Wonderful. Exactly, yeah. Thank you, Paddy. Worked out pretty well, yeah. Good morning, lads. How are we?
Go on, tell us what it was like.
It was brilliant. It was one of the best weekends of my life. Absolutely. It was class. It was myself and Andy Dunn reporting, and it was just, we were in a state of disbelief for the most part. And I don't even think at any point until probably deep into the second half, I didn't fully believe we were going to hang on. I was kind of thinking, at some point England are going to come back here. At some point, I think, was it when Jack Crowley kicked two penalties after the Ollie Lawrence try, then I started to go, okay, I think we've killed momentum a bit. And then the Fields of Athenry started to take over, and I was like, this is just class. The Irish English heads behind me as well, because we were in the commentary gantry, which is like right in amongst the stand. You're basically in the stand. And it was just glorious. Like, it was just class.
One of the things I think that it's very difficult on TV to see in rugby is the shape that they're playing. But when we scored the try that Osborne scored, there's this mad kind of American football sweep, a jet sweep to the left. Oh, well, this is good. I haven't seen this in a while.
They're Frawley and Crowley, yeah, it was nice. And that was a very un-Irish try as well, because it didn't go to plan. But then we had advantage anyway, so I kind of thought, right, they'll just probably take it up and wait for the referee. But we just kept playing, and that's not really our game. Mm. And then ended up in a try. It's one of the greatest, definitely one of the greatest Irish performances I've ever seen. Definitely the best I've ever seen live.
Really?
What? Yeah, totally. Like, it was just dominant. I think England were lucky to even get a couple of scores on the board, but it was just, despite us not actually having that much possession or territory, we were just perfect, especially in that first half. It was.
Is there a bit, Ireland were brilliant, but England were diabolical.
Oh, totally, yeah.
In every single aspect of the game. It felt like they are going to be eviscerated by it. I'm sure that I've seen some of their press reaction to it as it is. Like, but all the build-up, like, that they'd won, 11 or 12 games in a row, and they're being compared to France, you know, ahead of the championship, which just seems bizarre. But the loss to Scotland was, okay, that can happen. Scotland, for some reason, have a brilliant record against them, but their performance on Saturday was... Ireland were good, so not to put a dampener on that, but you have to do... You do take into account how bad the opposition were. So,
yeah, England are mad that they didn't actually just have a game plan to play against an Ireland team shorn of confidence. Mm. Like, if George Ford had kicked the ball to the 22 and they'd mauled each of the times instead of him trying to go for glory in that first half, who knows what would have happened? But they, you know, never give us up or an even break. They just let us into the game.
It was just that, though, as well. Like, it was like... Their defence was wide open. No intent. Their skills, their ball handling, knock-ons, line out. Literally every aspect of the game just seemed to collapse.
Yeah, their discipline was
everything
dreadful. Yeah,
one positive thing you could say, they did that okay.
Yeah, you feel like they were in their own heads from the selection. Like they had no line-out options that they believed in properly, because they picked the three lads at the back row whose job it was to slow Ireland down. And that's why they had the trick plays at the start of the lineup, and suddenly everybody's like, oh, this is...
Why are you doing that?
what are we doing here?
Yeah, overcomplicating this, lad.
Yeah, let's pass it to our tiny little scrum half and get him injured. Like, yeah. Okay, we'll take that.
They played like a team that had never met each other. Mm. You know, when you're playing like junior football or rugby or whatever it is, and you know, you pull a few lads together to throw on a jersey on a Saturday morning, like that's what it looked like. It looked like they had no cohesion. Defence, there were soft shoulders all over the place. Yeah. Like, I think it was Caelan Doris's break when he dummied through the two props. He just walked through them.
And
like
the players were in the first half.
He did it about five times. Mm. Yeah.
It was bizarre. Like, because I was writing reports during the whole thing, and I'd be typing away, and next thing you know, the crowd would erupt, and someone's made a record. That's like, can we stop a little bit? Because I've too much to write here. I'm running out of space in my Word doc. Stop scoring.
What was the in the stadium, the English reaction just seemed to be, the commentators are obviously saying it very, very quiet. Church, yeah. Queenie, I know, was there as well. Like, that's just kind of normal for Twickenham, is it? If they really aren't going really well, it's just going to be very passive.
Yeah, they got really on to George Ford. I don't know if it came through on the TV as much, but every pitch, Jesus, just jeering him. He was like, oh, this is surely not helping the man's confidence. But then even just at halftime, it took a lot of fans ages to come out from halftime for the second half. Like, people were in no rush, and then a bunch left.
By which stage we'd scored a try, right?
Yeah, exactly. We started off very fast, so a lot of fans left probably around the hour mark. Apparently there was thousands outside the stadium around 60 minutes. So, but there was a lot of ref whinging going on behind me specifically.
Oh, really?
But their discipline, like I said, was just shocking. Like, I think it really summed
great
it up.
Great to see, lads, isn't
it? It's amazing.
Oh, it was fast.
What a great start to the week.
Oh, Ben Earl, Pollock.
There's something.
Curry, couldn't happen to Pollock. A nicer trio.
We love that guy.
Oh.
There's something special about seeing Irishmen just whack an English team. Do you know what I mean? There's something really, like, excellent about watching that. But yeah, I think the early kickoff as well was great for the Irish people that made the trip over as well. And I'm sure everyone back home, nice evening out.
Yeah,
take your time getting back into London.
Exactly, yeah.
Not rushing for the jammed trains. Sure, that would have been fine because all the English had left early anyway.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, what a day. Yeah. What a day.
So who do we go? Who are we going to hear from here?
We take a listen to Andy Farrell first. I was speaking to him in the post-match presser. Do you want to play that now?
Does it feel better after a game like that, giving Irish people a great day, like you saw the crowd took over?
Honestly, it does. That's... We just had the Taoiseach in the change rooms there, and we spoke as a group after that as well. It is special. It is special because, honestly, I said it to the lads, I didn't care whether we won or lost today, just whether we grew as a group, because we know where we want to go to, and it just so happens that to the people of Ireland that winning does matter, and it brings a bit of joy in everyone's face. So for them, I mean the crowd, the people who turned up in the stadium, it was immense, and I hope everyone at home is just as proud as well.
Yeah, they were in great spirits, obviously, that post-match presser. I didn't actually...
They have a down week now, so there's actually an opportunity for them to go on the complete tear in London on Saturday night.
Where they stay? Yeah. Did they stay in London? Or did they come home?
Yeah, they did.
They generally stay the night of the game, don't they, and come home the morning after.
Very nice.
Yeah, there was a few lads excited to head out after. Just the bye-bye was getting in the mix zone after.
Magic.
Yeah, it was just the spirits were so high, and I even found I was speaking to Ruth Gorman from UTV after the game, and just like kind of forgot we were working. It just felt like such an occasion, like really genuinely blessed to be there.
Wow.
For like such an historic day, because it was the biggest margin of victory over England ever.
Oh, it's history.
To do it in Twickenham is insane. And especially with all the talk coming into that we were going to get, what was it, 10 points, 11 points spread?
Yeah, 11 spread. Everybody, all the underdogs covered the spread at the weekend.
Yeah.
It was one of those weird weekends where you're like, actually, the Six Nations is amazing.
Yeah, it's good. It is good when it gets going.
So, your standout players?
Gibson Park was unplayable at times. I know he got the man of the match, so it's an obvious one, but geez, it's one of the best games I've seen him have in an Irish jersey.
Do you know there's speculation about where he's going to be playing his rugby next
year? Yeah, I saw that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'd be
good timing for him to produce a performance like that. Yeah. Just will he be at Leinster or not? There's I think the contract might be up. He's 34.
Do you make an exception for him for the World Cup? Say it doesn't matter where you're playing, Jameson will...
No, you just pay the man whatever money he wants.
Yeah, true, yeah. That's that first and foremost, yeah, for sure.
Mo Salah.
Yeah.
Stuart McCluskey, obviously, he was immense across the park. There's so many moments, the chase down of Marcus Smith, the line break before the Ballacoon try. I think even the period where Osborne went off for his yellow card, so when Ringrose came off, he had to defend two positions for 10 minutes and played the full 80. And after that big chase down as well, I could tell I was speaking to him after the game. And
he looked like he was going to puke.
Oh, he was.
It actually looked he like, was oh, empty, I like am going to die done. Now.
He's in the form of his lifetime, isn't he? Like
33 years old, and he's
incredible.
Like, I'm an Ulster fan, so I've been watching him play good rugby for a long time. But yeah, he's really peaking now. It seems mad that he hasn't been picked more.
He's such a bad injury record as well, hasn't he?
True,
and then obviously the centre Bundy.
yeah.
Henshaw, Ringrose, that's a hard axis to try and break into.
Yeah.
But anytime he did get a chance, there was a knock or a bang. He's been unfortunate around that, like where it's got, like, Gibson Park is 34.
Yeah.
Oh, he's, well, close to 33. The World Cup is what?
18 months away.
16, 18 months away. Like, can they keep this up and peak? At that time, we felt France was the best opportunity we'd ever have to try and do something special at a World Cup. And you look, what the guys did on Saturday is incredible, but it's a year and a half away.
I do think we're in a slightly better position as well, because we do know there's actually players coming through this time. So there's lads that would have played against Italy, say, last week, that could have easily started that game at the weekend but didn't need to. So we have that kind of old guard of your Van der Fleers and your Jack Cullen, who obviously didn't play but was supposed to be on the bench. Tyke Byrne. But now you have guys like a Cormac Institute who are coming through. Mm. Ian Prendergast. Even Nick Timoney. I know he's not the youngest going, but he's playing good rugby.
Unbelievable.
He's playing great rugby.
Energy, isn't it?
Every time he gets tackled, it's like, okay, another 10 yards.
Yeah.
Like, that go forward is unbelievably valuable. Yeah. Gibson Park, was he rested for the Italy game or was he dropped?
I think he was rested. I think Craig Casey was always going to get that game, but I
suppose it felt like a dropping because everybody played so bad against France. But even though now, you know, they're like, of course, we're always going to play him here and here.
There's no harm in a little nudge in the backside as well. Like.
Yeah, well, Van der Fleer was definitely dropped.
Yeah.
Because he didn't play in the France game.
Yeah. Like, I asked Gibson Park.
And he was sensational.
In the week leading up to last weekend, I was like, does that kind of light a fire under you that Craig Casey was picking that game? It's like, yeah, it does. Like, I want to come back and prove myself again. Even though I think there's a bit of a pretty big gulf there. Andy Dunn was saying, out of all the positions in that team, I think that's the biggest gulf there is to the second option. I think he's right. I think Craig Casey wasn't great against Italy. I thought he was decent off the bench.
Yeah.
Against England, albeit he probably didn't have to do that much. The game was kind of won by that stage, but Gibson Park's absolutely crucial to us right now.
You said Van der Fleer here as well. Like, he had a tough line store, obviously, with Andy Farrell as the coach, and it was like he wasn't an arse's roar, but that's a tough position to be in. I've been obviously World Player of the Year only a couple of years ago, and just we haven't seen anything like what we saw on Saturday from him in about 2 or 3 years. Like, that's the reality of it. Yeah. So it's just, like I say, he's not he is an experienced player. I don't call players old, like, but that was the standout thing for me from Saturday. It was like, here's all these guys. The team itself has been questioned, obviously, but individuals who have done so much, either with Leinster or Ireland over the years, have been questioned. And there was a bit of the old Michael Jordan in that performance from a lot of those guys.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you write me off. And that the worry, again, not to put a damper on it, that's not sustainable
for
England away. You said it there. Like, we love to play, playing against England and everything that goes with that. But it's, can all of those players with the age profile that they have, can they keep that going for, okay, they've Wales in a couple of weeks on a Friday night, should be okay. Scotland then, and that's the Six Nations. But then you've another year and a half to the World Cup. And those guys are still going to be critical in Australia. So it's just, as brilliant as Saturday was, like, only a week ago, we were having a conversation around there's no depth in the Irish team.
Yeah.
The provinces, the underage, the 20s going win on Friday night.
That was
night.
A brilliant win as well.
Incredible. Yeah. So it can turn very, very quickly, and it is brilliant, and it's a lot more positive, obviously, after an incredible performance. But it's just interesting to see how the next couple of months play out for those guys, both with Ireland and then obviously with their provinces as well. But
yeah. A couple of comments in there. James Kennedy. Not one Irish player had below a 9 out of 10 performance.
They were all very good.
They were saying on the Sunday paper review, you could go from 1 to 15 and say a nice thing about every single player. Like, they were all just, they all stood up and played their perfect game. Like, Jack Riley didn't have to do anything too amazing, but that's exactly the game he needed to have. Just not force anything.
Crowley was,
he was brilliant.
I was delighted for him. It's been tough going for both of those lads, but he stood up there. I thought it was I think that debate for the next short period of time is done.
Yeah.
You know, he's answered a lot there.
Yeah.
It's really interesting that they picked Frawley to be on the bench with the 5-3 split. Because you kind of felt like that was Harry Burns' position if it was going to be 5-3, particularly when they sent Frawley back earlier in the training camp.
Mm.
And he wasn't part of the main camp that was being hothouse for the France game. But suddenly he's back on the bench. Is he number two now?
I don't know. I think the thing with Tommy O'Brien was interesting because I think...
I had to say, I saw that, I was like, that doesn't make any sense. And I'm absolutely thrilled for him.
He was brilliant.
Because he's kind of come of age now where it's like...
Tommy O'Brien.
He has this terrible experience in France where the whole team has a terrible experience.
That's a tough place to learn your trade.
Isn't it? Seventh cap,
arguably the best team in the world. Like
first Six Nations start and you're like, oh, well.
And he's the very centre of what went wrong as well. The high ball.
Yeah.
That was brilliant, obviously. Tommy O'Brien on the bench looking... Like in hindsight, covers 13, Ringrose was going into that game as a slight injury doubt. Obviously, Lowe had a lot of strapping on that knee.
I didn't realize injured as well. 13, does he?
He did. He used to play a centre for Leinster a little bit. So, yeah, right. In hindsight, it does make sense, but it was a big call at the time. And Frawley obviously essentially covered fullback in the end. So,
yeah. But Harry Byrne, if you pick him, your fullback then is Crowley. So you could have done that if you wanted. If you felt like there was a big gap between them, but now there isn't any significant gap between them and they feel relatively confident. The reclamation project for Sam Prendergast is going to be interesting. You just stick him on the bench for a while for Leinster and let him find himself over the next 6 months.
It was interesting. He didn't travel with the team for the England game at all. So it was very much giving you a break here, mental and physical break, you know?
Well, that's what happens. If you don't play well and you have a real, real underperformance, then you're not going to play. And I know the debate that's gone on for the last 2 years around, obviously, the Crowley, Prendergast, Leinster, Munster, all that stuff that goes with it. There's a lot of nonsense attached to around that. But Andy Farrell is looking at it. If you're in form or a guy is playing better than you, he's going to get the opportunity.
Yeah.
And okay, Prendergast wasn't going as well, but neither was Jack Crowley. And it wasn't Andy Farrell sitting there going, this Machiavellian plot where I'm not going to pick the Munster guy. Neither of them were playing that well. So that's why it was neck and neck, it seemed. Prendergast, absolutely, we've spoken about it on the show before, Jerry. He has magic. He has stardust. There's a ceiling there. If he gets to it, whenever he gets to it, he can be a sensational player. But the reality of it is now, and it's not, I didn't find it a surprise that he's not even in the 23 because he was playing that poorly. And Andy Farrell goes, I can't pick you. And it's not, whatever way they dress it up, it's a rest or I'm taking you out of the firing line or this type of thing. You're not playing well enough to play. And that's why it was important for Ireland, but for Crowley in particular on Saturday, to go in and perform. And that debate is put to bed. And it's a case of, I don't think there will be that conversation over the next 3 weeks for the remainder of Six Nations. Crowley's going to be the man. And then we get into post-Six Nations and it's the Champions Cup and Prendergast has an opportunity with Leinster to maybe lead them and do something special there. And if he does that, then the next batch of internationals in the summer for this Nations Cup or whatever it is, then it's a debate again. But at the minute, it's not. Yeah. And it's purely on form. And
it may well be for the next couple of years in his career, he's a brilliant sub coming off the bench in relief of Harry Byrne and or Crowley. And like,
but Jerry, he's not even there yet.
No,
he's not even there now. So.
No. So it's a fair point. But like, I wonder... If I'm Neil Cullen at the start and the Champions Cup comes careering towards you, are you like, that guy whose confidence isn't greater? I'm going to put Harry Byrne out there, who I know is going to be a good solid 7 out of 10, who might
Neil
rise to an 8 or 9.
Whoever gives them the best chance to win. I'm not worried about, you know, maybe 10 years down the line, this is going to
happen. So who do you think that at the moment, I'd say they're probably...
What about Frawley there as well? I know Frawley's leaving.
Yeah, maybe.
Where does Frawley play?
Yeah, maybe. And in fairness, big balls on him to be able to come back from... You know, being on the outside, I can absolutely fit in straight away wherever I'm needed and play very well. So a lot of redemption stories for people at the weekend. Not a redemption story for the new Spurs manager who...
Igor.
Woof. Same Spurs, new Spurs, same as all Spurs.
They're in danger, aren't they?
Totally,
really?
Yeah.
You're kind of looking at where are they going to pick up points?
There's no green shoots there.
No. And the injury list, obviously Maddison and Kulusevski are their marquee attackers. They're not coming back before the end of the season either. So there's like, where do they score and where do they get any sort of momentum? Like their home form is diabolical, but is Igor Tudor the man?
Two victor of the spoils. Jokeris, I thought they would have gone for Easy Street or Eberechi Easy, but they didn't. Eberechi also scored twice. He loves playing against Spurs. For Arsenal, it was the perfect fixture. Get right, nice Spurs, win 3 points, be like, yeah, everything's grand. Performance was good.
Yeah.
Are you buying Arsenal?
Oh, I think they'll do it, yeah. I think they're... I'm not sure they're, it's going to be a serene ride to the title and they're going to win the remaining 10 games. I just think there's not a vintage... It's not a vintage Pep team chasing them down. I think Arsenal could slip up again, but I don't see City winning their last 10 or 11 games either. It's not the years gone of Pep's incredible team or Klopp's amazing Liverpool. I think Arsenal will win the league. But I expect one or two more bumps.
It's a proper title race.
Yeah, we just need it. Last year was a bit of a washout with Liverpool steamrolling everyone.
And it does feel like both teams could, at some stage, reel off 3 or 4 games, but you don't expect them to end it before they at least play each other.
I think everyone wants something to be on the line for that game in April at the Etihad. Which would be great. the narrative around that. There's just the meme culture around Arteta and Arsenal, and there's the imminent collapse around the corner or calamity. It is great to watch, but Arsenal are the best team, lads. They're the best squad by a mile.
Yeah, the depth they have, yeah.
Like the Wolves game was like an aberration last week. They go, how? Wolves are one of the worst teams ever to play in the Premier League. Like Derby County 07-08 type stuff. Swindon, back in the 90s, Jeremy, when they were showing their age. And Arsenal tuning up and don't close that out. Mm. That type of performance or that type of result is, you're going to go, how does that happen? But they steadied the ship.
That's it. That's what that was really important. And actually, maybe Spurs were the perfect opponent for them because there was no way that they would, say you take away Spurs being Spurs and play the team who were careering towards relegation, just had a new manager and are absolutely terrible. Maybe Arsenal might have been slightly complacent, but the fact that it was a North London derby,
yeah, narrows the focus for them. Yeah,
and that's all they need to do now is like just be properly focused.
Well, the only thing you could potentially count against was the League Cup final against City, which again will be a box office event. They're still in the cup, although I think it's Mansfield in the cup, so that should be straightforward. Champions League, but they have the squad for this.
They do,
but they will have a lot of games and they're being dragged to a lot of different places. But that's the nature of trying to be one of the best teams.
How do you approach the perspective from Arsenal's side when it comes to the cup final?
Oh, you got to win it. You have to win it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that it's against City, but even if it wasn't, just a trophy for Arteta, just momentum.
So you put your full team out. There's no minding of anybody. So. You go and it's like kill or be killed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You wheel out
cup final and it's against City. Yeah. What are you thinking?
Well, I don't know. I just think that like... if you offered them at the end of the season, you lose this, but you win that. And I know there's...
Oh, they might lose it, but I think they're going to go for it. Of course they would.
And how do you recover from that then? What's the...
Arteta's on LinkedIn, he'll think of something. all my victories count as failures, all that type of stuff. He'll figure something out. But I think they're going to go for it. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, no, they'll definitely go for it, but do you not leave a little bit in reserve where you're like...
Give yourself an excuse, basically.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, come on. It's the lead sport here.
I know, but they need to win the league. Say they win that and lose the league, everybody like, oh, what are you doing? This is a chance.
No, I.
So smash City early and often. Send them back. Okay.
And you look at the
rise is too big.
The FA Cup fixture is very friendly. We don't know who they're going to get in the Champions League, but that could be. Like you look at the Champions League last week, like Karabakh, how are they? And like it's so diluted, you could get a handy game there as well. Like City, your biggest rivals for results in a cup final. Arsenal, I don't think he's taken any foot off the gas there. I'd be amazed if he did. Amazed. Yeah.
We'll talk more about the football with Henry Winter if anybody wants to mention that. I do want to get to the GAA. We're going to come back to Gaelic football around about 9:15 this morning with David Hyland. Here is some Ger Brennan in the aftermath of a fairly routine victory for Kerry against the Dubs on Saturday evening. Have a look at this.
Con tweaked his hamstring. So similar, John, to what kept him out of the Mayo game last minute as well. Again, he wanted to push on. But bigger picture in mind, John, we just said we better pull him back, you know. So he just tweaked it, chasing back on... I think Jason Foley, he was covering him, and he just tweeted, yeah.
Ger, just on the Kilkenny one earlier on, you seem to be rotating the kind of the three men up, and you know every time you looked up, there's a different style of forward up there. There's a lot of options with Bugler or McGarry or Conn and Paddy Small. You might be trying to try different things there, but is it very hard to try things and also try and blood fellas, or how are you finding that element of it too? You got the Rossies next to had a big comeback win tonight as well.
Did he? Okay, yeah. So yeah, look, Ross Common are going very well then. I wasn't aware of the result. So we're not too focused on who we're playing week to week. We don't give too much time to just yet, Tommy. We're trying to just get our own couple of bits and pieces in order. Of which there's work to do, and again we're happy to try out new things. And again, I did mention before, it's a risk reward strategy in terms of staying in Division One, but being better served coming to the Championship. But the preferred option would be stay in Division One and be better prepared coming to the Championship.
Did you hear that rumor that Clifford?
Jack, you got the job done tonight.
Clifford wasn't going to play any of the away games, but sure, Croke Park is their home anyway, so he played for that one.
I didn't hear that one. No.
Joe Brennan's pretty calm there, because all my Dublin supporting friends are losing their minds about what they're seeing at the moment. Are they wrong?
No, well, Joe's calm enough. Yeah, that's his nature, if you know him. So, I don't think any of this is a major surprise. You felt Division One was going to be a struggle for this Dublin team. If you look at it right, Dublin, for the last couple of years, we're building towards, there's going to be a huge changing of the player pool. That's just the reality. That team, successful team, had come to the end of its cycle. And whoever the manager was, and it's Jer, was taking over from Desi, was going to have to find probably 12, 13 new players for their squad. But the challenge for Dublin is, it's not just in their squad. When the championship comes around, they're probably going to have at least 6 new players in their first 15, never mind their squad. They're going to summon in the full back line, possibly 3 across the half back line. Who plays midfield with Pat O'Coughlin Byrne? That's totally for grabs, and maybe 1 or 2 forward positions. So the turnover, not just in the squad, but in the first 15, is going to be huge. Like, Dublin are going to take the Leinster Championship with probably 6 rookies. That's a massive, massive ask for any team. And outside of that is, it's not like underage success in Dublin over the last 5 or 6 years has been dominant, and there's a whole household of underage stars who are going to be those 6 or 7 players.
Is there an obvious reason for that?
The underage?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's definitely being looked at now, because the reality, Dublin aren't competing to win All-Irelands at under 17 or under 20. They're not even winning Leinster at that age group. Look, the minors last year, like, convincingly beaten by Loud. They haven't really been a conversation. Kildare have been probably the dominant team at underage in Leinster. And it's a massive drop-off from, say, a golden generation of players in kind of the 2010s that came through and winning under-21 championships. They haven't won anything since 2017, nearly a decade ago. And that was Conn. You know, so Conn is the last real star that's come through. Outside of that, if you look at players who really made the step up into the senior team, into the squad, like Lee Gannon, you know, that's kind of it off the top of my head, you know, in the space of 9 years. Is that enough?
No, it clearly isn't. And is there a problem with the talent identification? Is there something obvious that is like holding the county back, considering the advantages that it has?
Yeah, look, I think there's huge numbers playing. You know, that's not a challenge. It's how you filter that and how you try and navigate your way through to get the best 15, 16, 17-year-olds and give them the best coaching. Where it's, you know, I did a bit of work with development squads for a couple of years when I finished playing, and it's the surprise for me was the sheer number of young footballers coming out that you could go to an under-15 development squad game, and there could be 300 kids there from, you know, clubs all over Dublin. And you might say, Jesus, people down the country are laughing and going, we don't have enough players. But in Dublin, if you've 300 kids coming out, there's no coaching happening there then. It's literally just, we need to play a trial match here, and kids mightn't get the best experience then. Or, you know, if you're a 15-year-old and you're playing a trial match, it's very hard to kind of stand out and play your normal game. And that mightn't go as well, and then go, well, I'm just going to play rugby then, or I'll play hurling, or I'll play soccer,
or I might stop playing altogether. And it's a challenge for the development squad system in Dublin, where it's probably a unique challenge in comparison to other counties, that we have too many players coming out. How do we ensure that these guys get the best opportunity to perform and that we can actually coach them? Because it's very hard. I'm sure there's coaches from all different disciplines listening this morning going, if you've 50 or 60 kids arrive for training sessions, you're not exactly going to get to coaching any of them.
Yeah.
So looking at the underage structures, I know this is happening at county board level. But unfortunately, like you say, there hasn't been success for 8-9 years. We're seeing the roots of that now in the senior team. And the challenge for Ger Brennan is trying to bring, I need to bring 10, 15 guys through. I need 5 or 6 guys who are going to be ready to start in the championship. And these are not the players who've been dominant at their age group at a national level. That is just a reality. There's no Finbar Rorty or Kieran Moore, these guys coming through, or Colby McDonald and Mayo. Look, at Kerry's success is based on 5 minor titles in a row, Hogan Cup victories for, Dingle Schools and St. Brendan's down in Killarney. It's, the underage success hasn't happened. We're seeing the results of that now. And unfortunately, that's going to take time to rectify, but it needs to start nearly, I know Mick Bohan was on a couple of weeks ago, needs to start nearly from scratch. And go, are Dublin doing the same things at development squad level that they were 20 years ago? And they probably are. And that needs to be looked at and innovated.
You were talking about the team that came through, the 1993 kids,
That's a complete aberration.
And as a result, maybe everybody assumed, well, sure.
Well, they did, yeah.
It's obviously working, because look what they produced this lot.
The senior team were winning, and which was great. And then you had a group of lads. Like, I don't think you'll ever see this again. It was like Kieran Kilkenny, Brian Fenton, Jack McCaffrey, Paul Mannion, John Small, Niall Scully, all on the same team, same age profile.
Good team.
That's like 4 or 5 generational players coming through on the one team. There's a bit of luck involved in that. Like, that's not some massive strategic plan here, that you've got these guys who just happen to be born in the same year. And that team, who won, I think they won the 2012 Under-21 All-Ireland, 2014 Under-21 All-Ireland, they formed the basis for the next 10 years of success. But those guys, most of them are gone. Kieran and Niall are still there. Con's a little bit younger, but there hasn't been anything like that since. And it's not just about, you don't have to win, you know, the minor or the under 20 All Ireland, but you need 3 or 4 guys who are really dominant at a national level in their age group. And Dublin haven't had any of those type of guys. So that needs to be looked at. There's no secret sauce. You look maybe Kildare's renaissance under Brian Flanagan and why their upward trends. You look at Tyrone, obviously. It's all on the basis of successful underage teams.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge for the development squad system in Dublin. There's a hell of a lot of players. How do we tailor this and tweak it where we're able to identify the best guys and give them coaching at 15, 16, 17 years of age? Because at the minute, it's probably not happening, and that's what you're seeing in the senior team.
All right, we'll come back to that a little bit later on as well, and the rest of the stories in the league. You mentioned Kobe Bryant. Tab of the morning goes to the Mirror this morning.
Kobe McDonald, Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Boyant.
Oh, Kobe. Oh, wow. Okay. Very nice. Yeah.
Kobe McDonald was pretty good. Won 4 off 6 possessions.
Take that.
Everybody in Mayo is waking up a little bit happier this morning. Just before we wrap up the first part of the show, Quinny's outside. He's coming in next, and Matty Williams as well. You were talking to Lewis Moody at the game on Friday night.
Friday night, yeah. I was at the Ireland-England Legends game, which happens every year the night before the Six Nations game. And this year was in aid of the Lewis Moody Foundation. Of course, he had his motor neuron disease diagnosis there back in October. And now the match was previously played in honour of Doddy Weir, and Lewis Moody actually played in it a few years ago. Obviously very sad news back in October that he's come down with this disease, but I got a few minutes with him, got to chat to him for a little while at the game, and just a special man, really. Like, don't think I've ever met anyone quite like him. He had time for, I'd say, just about everyone that showed up to that game. It was in Twickenham Stoop, so there was a good few people at it, and he was there for a couple of hours after the game just talking to everyone. Looks great, sounds great, very strong. It's one of those special people that you get to talk to in this type of job where you're blessed to do what you do. And yeah, I just wanted to mention it because it was a high, like, of a weekend that was really, really, was a great time. probably the highlight, talking to Lewis Moody.
That video is available on our social channels as well. It's 5 minutes past 8.